Have you ever had questions that you wish you had your very own on-call pediatrician? Well, guess what? We are going to have a real pediatrician as a regular guest on the Dad Podcast. So if you have a question you've always wanted cleared up, please send it to questions@thedadpodcast.com. Because Dr. J wants you to stop Googling that shit and find out the real deal Homiefield answer from a real deal Homiefield pediatrician. So ask us at questions@thedadpodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode 42.
Where's the song?
I'm sorry. Do you want to start with the song? I'm gonna throw it in post. I have a production right now.
You're a professional. I'm sorry. Song pumps me up.
I'm talking live via Skype with a dear friend of the show, probably the longest friend of the show, Joseph Bears. He is in a fantastic Marriott in Culver City near my home, while I am in a quasi-good Hampton Inn in Clovis, California.
Oh, we could be doing this live.
I know. I was so fun. Well, it's funny is that we made plans to like get together and hang out. I'm like, great, we're all having drinks at my house. And then I'm like, wait, I have shows. I have gigs. I have things that I'm doing. But you were just yelling at me because I was telling you that my wife is by herself. The kids are with my parents, so she's solo for the weekend. And she just went and had dinner with her gay friend. So she's living it up, Sex in the City style.
Why even mention that he's gay?
Because I think it's important. I think, especially with the political climate of what we're in right now, that I think it's funny because I like the idea that my wife is living there's a stereotypical aspect to what she's doing, that it's like when she's going all in.
Fat hag.
I wonder, let's play that game because it would just be fun for maybe us.
Fat hag game?
Yes.
I'll start. Margaret Cho.
Perfect. mine, Sandra Bernhardt.
Good.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I want to play that game of, isn't that a thing that used to be when Sex and the City was popular that a girl would say, I'm a Samantha, I'm a this, or are you familiar with the Sex and the City ladies at all or no?
Yeah. I am.
All right. So
I've seen an episode or two.
Which one of the Sex and the City ladies would you say is your wife? Is she more of a what?
I guess.
And you might have to help me because I don't know anything about the show.
Sarah Jessica Parker, probably. I guess whatever her name was.
She's Carrie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because she. Yeah, the other three are so specific and stereotypical, and my wife's pretty much neutral. You know, she's not so much like any of them. So I would say Carrie. Yes,
she's a Carrie.
How about you?
Let's see. I'm gonna go. Let's see, Samantha. Oh, so not Samantha, the old Kim Cattrall one. She's not like a freak trying to move around.
Right.
Let's see, which one was Charlotte? That's Kristen Davis.
Charlotte's she's very like a prude. She's a prude. She's very straight laced, very vanilla.
No.
Miranda? Right. And then the other one was the lawyer, very type A. What was her name? Miranda?
Yeah, Miranda. You're right. Miranda.
Yeah.
Miranda Hobbs.
Very type A. Needed everything a certain way, very controlling. So, you know, they're so specific, whereas Carrie was more free spirit and.
Which one is most like a trucker? Whichever one is most like a trucker, that's my wife. You know what I mean? Which one is most likely to belch and fart in the waning hours of the evening?
She's Mr. Big.
Uh, Perfect.
Oh, you are the chick. Justin, you are the chick. You are the chick.
I know.
You are the chick.
It's so miserable, man. It's so emasculating. Although, this is something that I've been wanting to talk to you about, is that my resurgence with my Niners making a comeback, my resurgence in the interest in the NFL has been phenomenal. I get into a hotel now, Joseph Bears, and I turn on the NFL goddamn network, and I'm into the path to the draft. I live a football life, goddammit, and it's some good programming over there. Holy shit.
You just signed, and you signed Anquan Boldin from the Ravens, who beat you in the Super Bowl, is now your wide receiver. That doesn't suck.
No.
To go with Crabtree, who is awesome.
Yep.
Vernon Davis doesn't suck.
Mario
Love
Manningham.
Love Colin Kaepernick and his ill-placed tattoos.
Yeah.
This is good. You guys, great defense, great coach. You guys are set up for a five-year run of – goodness.
Who doesn't love a Polish Mexican that treats his body like an Etch-a-Sketch? I say no one. I
didn't know he was either of those things.
I didn't know either. I just I think he looks like a cholo. His last name is Kaepernick. That sounds Polish to me. But he likes the ink. What can we say?
Oh, I love listening to your show, and when you start talking about your wife, and you are such a chick. It makes me laugh. I laugh out loud. I LOL. And especially because I know you as a friend. I've known you for years and years, 10 years before you even started this podcast. And I do know that you, and I've known your wife for the same amount of time, and it's wonderful. The roles are reversed, and you try, Justin, you try, but
is it that obvious when you listen to the show that I like, cause here's the thing. I feel like I'm also a man. Like I'm a, no, not really. How dare you? You son of a bitch. All right, everybody, stay frosty.
No, Justin, you are all man. I'm just saying when you
don't fucking patronize
about your wife.
When I what about my wife?
Stories about your wife.
It's hard, man.
Oh, you are.
She
just...
they literally. I don't know what goes on with this bitch's gastrointestinal system, but. At 9 o'clock, just she just starts belching and shit like there's no tomorrow. Like, how are you supposed to work into a mood for some lovemaking when she's
that whole string lately of she said she made one comment about the not wanting the sex or can you and then you just
I ran with
it. Of mud. Hello, therapy. You're going back. Does your vagina ache daily? What's going on there? Just come on.
Weirdly enough, our cycles have synced. And that's what is happening, I think.
I love you so much. I love you.
It's true. I mean, here's the thing. I talked about it on the show probably more than I should have in retrospect about her saying I couldn't imagine having sex with you every day for a month. I know that upped my chick factor like tenfold. But my only beef with it is that, A, I was slinging some pretty good meat. You know, I was throwing down. And then, B, I was a good dude. Like, I don't understand what's wrong with having a good man who is, you know, sensitive to your needs. And he can, you know, he could throw an O-face upstairs every now and then. And why wouldn't that be a bonus, in my opinion? And that's what really bothered me. I think it wasn't so much the fact that I felt like I wasn't sexually attractive. It was more that I thought it was flying in the face of my game, which in my opinion was pretty high level. I mean, you know, I was at least an offensive player of the week or something along those lines. And
I think you just caught her on a bad day. I think literally you took a throwaway line and you just made a mountain of a molehill just because I know she loves the heck out of you, but it's just like, you know, you eat the same thing every single day. You're like, sorry, Justin. Listen, I love me some pad thai. One of my favorite things. If I eat pad thai every day for what? How long have you been married or even together? 16,
we've been together 16, 17 years, somewhere around there.
17 years, pad thai. Oh, love it. O-face. Amazing.
Yeah.
What if we just had pad thai? You know, 17 years later, what if we just had pad thai every day for a month?
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine?
I could. I also like a good pad thai, but I think I could have pad thai every day for a month. I really think I could easily. And that's not just to prove my point either, Mr. Bears. That is a solid fact. I could have pad thai every day for a month.
I hate you because all your whole podcast, you've built this persona of my wife is down. Is down whenever.
Right.
And you've built this, and every man that listens to your podcast is like, fuck you. Because no one has that situation. You know that's very special, right?
Right, I do. But then it blew up in my face, and I was like, fuck everybody. Like, that's why I brought it up.
I bet it was just for, a couple of weeks? She was just like, oh, can you imagine, because I'm tired, I'm this and that. I bet you she's riding that train again. I bet you she got a ticket.
No. Well, here's the thing, because here's what happens. We had what I would say an overly healthy sexual relationship before we had children. And these fucking kids just messed it all up. My God, did they tear it up. Now I talked about it last week a little bit, but which I know you haven't had a chance to hear because literally I just recorded it an hour ago. But the sickness that's been going around in my house has just fucked up my love life. Like I never would have imagined that a common cold would be an STD in my marriage. You know what I mean? Like that would be a humongous roadblock. And what makes me manly, and this is what, you know, again, gets the sand out of my vagina, is that, listen, I don't snot in the nose or not. I'm down to go. Let's do it. I can hang with that.
My wife's like, oh, you know, you're not feeling well. I'm like, listen, it's that whole thing where, that whole sex puck that you and Bill used to do, that whole thing where.
Which is coming.
Well, I was gonna.
Yeah.
You know, maybe start something, the woman says, but you were sleeping, you were tired, you were this. I'm like, listen, that will never, ever, ever be an issue. Just, you know, you just say, hey, you wanna, pants are off, life is good, let's go. Always DTF, always.
Yes. That's what Natalie said. Well, I thought you were tired. I go, I am never too tired for that. And you brought it up, and I, for the new listeners, it was a while ago that Bill and I, we used to complain about how Bill's moment was that his wife would be in boy shorts, like the sexy undies or whatever, and that was supposed to be the, hey, I'm DTF. My wife's move was she would get up the next morning and we'd be like pouring cereal, and she'd go, man, I wanted you last night. And it was like the most frustrating thing in the world. So I came up with this idea, when you go to a churrascaria, and this is mostly due to our mutual friend Mike Connor. He's the real inspiration behind this, because he took me to Fogo de Chao, the famous chain of Brazilian steakhouses. If you have one in your neighborhood, please go. It's a
Meat on a sword. Can't go wrong.
It's a nice juxtaposition of masculinity and femininity, in that there are guys in skirts that have beef on swords that come around and serve it to you.
Not gay at all.
Nope.
Nope.
No, homoerotic, but in a manly way, like a Greco-Roman way.
In fact, your wife is out with one of those waiters right now.
That's right, she is.
Which is great.
So the coasters, they have these coasters that are there that one side is green, the other side is red. So to let the guy know that as he's walking around, so you don't have to be on the, like, have your head on a swivel like you're a middle linebacker or a mic back, as I like to now call it, because I watch NFL Network all the time.
That's correct.
But anyway, you can put green means, hey, I'm good to go. Let's do this. Bring down. Let me have the meat, Big Daddy. Red means no, thank you. I've had my fill. And so I thought that's what needs to happen, because you can't, in a marriage, it's weird. You could look at your wife and go, look at my back. Is there a boil on my back? Or, you know what I mean? Or she could sit there and go, there's this thing in my mouth, or what, you know, oh my God, smell this. You know, you can have that kind of level of intimacy. And then you also have the romantic intimacy, but the idea of kind of, I feel like, and I don't know if every marriage is the same way, but there's a clunkiness to that romantic level of intimacy that, like, there's a familiarity that almost ruins the excitement of it, like it was when you were dating, but you kind of, you don't know how to really get that ball rolling, because you don't want, as a guy, you have to fight this urge that you're like, I should just be able to, you know, do like a double tap on your right shoulder, and that should be enough. So my idea was that we needed an unspoken way of communicating, so that you as the man, who aren't always like, hey, do you want to do it? Hey, do you want to do it? Hey, do you want to do it? And then you could put the ball in the lady's court where it already is, and she could say, hey, now's a good night. And they're being made as we speak. The sex pucks or coasters. So you can they'll be available as a digital download that you could make them your own. I decided, instead of putting out the money to actually make custom coasters, I would put it out there to see what the interest was. And so it'll be available soon as a digital download on a PDF through the dadpodcast.com, where you could print it out and you could put it on your existing coaster, or you could just make your own. And you put I imagine this to be this way, where you put one on each end of your end tables. You know what I mean? And so then you could do it to where it's like launching a nuclear missile from a submarine. You know, you need, it's two keys. So if one is red, one is green, that's a no-go for launch. But obviously, two reds, no-go for launch. But two greens, that's right. Let's get those launch codes ready. Here we go.
you can just make the guy one green on both sides, like a, you know, like a quarter with two-headed quarter, because that's mine would always live green. Would yours.
I do like that idea that it just collects dust on the one side. Well, maybe you know what you do. Maybe you feel like you throw some red on there just to change it up. Keep her on her toes.
Throw sand in her game. I like it.
Yeah, you play a little hard to get. You know what I mean? And maybe you don't know. I mean, some wife out there might be aroused by that. She's like, what? Oh, no way.
You don't want this?
And you have to fight the urge to say no. And I bet you that means that she's going to try just that much harder the next time. That's the way I see it happening. But then I think there's another side element, too, that it adds some freshness that isn't, you know, dressing up in a Girl Scout outfit. What you could do is you put this coaster in various locations around the house as like a surprise. You know what I mean? I'm saying you work it into a raisin bran, and that's not a euphemism at all. It means raisin bran. And that way when she pours it out, it falls out like a toy out of a Cracker Jack, and she's like, uh-oh, hello. Or maybe you get to flip it. Like a coin toss at the Super Bowl, you know, that decides whether it's go time or not. This is endless, possibilities of my genius.
Hey, baby, tonight I'm giving you two scoops.
Two scoops of sunshine, baby, coming your way.
Oh, you want the Honey Nut Cheerio? Okay.
Yeah. Well, guess what? It's chock full of nuts. Boom goes the dynamite. Oh, gonna pollinate that like the bee. Oh, damn it.
Are we gonna talk about what I talked? I think we discussed maybe doing a Skype a month ago. Are we gonna discuss your?
We can. We can if you want. I don't care. It's not like she listens to the show. Number one, she.
Oh, she. I just want you to. I just want you to feel it because I was with you and it was rough. And
yeah.
If you need a sounding board, I'm here for you.
Well, it's funny now because it is 2 months removed, but what he's talking about is, and I've alluded to it a couple of times since then, is that I had 2 weeks back-to-back of work booked in Denver, and I called my mom and said, hey, she wanted me to come out and go out there with the boys to hang out, and so we go out there, and in her defense, Jacob got sick the day before, but I called and said, is this going to be okay? You know? And she was like, yeah. And I go, well, this is going to be 2 weeks where while I'm at shows, you're gonna have to watch the kids. Is that fine? She's like, yes, yes, yes. Bring them. So we go through the first week. Jack's not sleeping very well. They're alternating back and forth between like getting fevers and stuff. And I got there on a Wednesday. My first show was on Thursday, I think, if I remember correctly. Yes. And so I showed her the routine. And then, of course, the first time I go out on stage, I come off stage. The manager of the club comes up to me and he says, your wife called. Your kid is sick. I was like, of course. So my wife gets to have this wonderful interaction with my mom where she calls and she says, my mom says, Jacob's woken up and he's crying and screaming that his throat hurts and his ear hurts.
Okay. Time out. Let's go. We got to go back. We got to rewind a little bit. Because people are going, where's your wife at this point? Which is what I also asked.
My wife's at home. She's in Burbank, California.
And so why didn't she come with you? Why wasn't she a part of this? Because I think this is an important part of the story.
I believe it. Trust me. I need your guidance. She no, I do. She couldn't get time off from work. My mom was trying to ask her to just come out. But the way my wife's work schedule works is that she's off on Fridays and Sundays, and she works like a half day on Saturday. So there isn't like a Saturday, Sunday that she ever really has off to where she could take the weekend. And so that coupled with the holidays, and my wife doesn't travel well. Like she could have easily gotten on a flight at like 4:30, come to Denver, been there for all day Sunday, and then flown home Sunday night and got to hang out. But that's just not how she's wired.
Right.
And so she was at home. My mom was going to watch the kids. We didn't get a sitter or anything. And so my wife gets a call from my mom and saying, Jacob woke up screaming and he's complaining that his throat and his ear hurts. And she's like, what do I do? And my mom says, well, give him some Advil. And so she's like, okay, where is it? And Natalie, this is what I love. Natalie
says, your wife said, give him some Advil.
Yes. And then my mom said, okay, where is it? And my wife, Natalie, said, I don't know. I'm in Los Angeles. So she goes, my guess is that it's going to be near the bags or something like that. So my mom finds it. She goes, how much do I give him? Natalie tells her the dosage. Jacob, she goes, okay, take this medicine. Jacob goes, no, I don't want to take it. And she goes, he doesn't want to take it. She said, Jack's starting to get fussy. And I'm just going to wait until Jack goes to sleep, and then I'll give him the medicine. Now, Jacob, mind you, is screaming bloody murder in the background. And so Natalie says, no, you're not. She said, you're going to tell him he has to take the medicine and you're going to give it to him because otherwise he's going to be screaming until he gets that in him. And then 15 minutes afterwards is when it'll kick in.
Right.
So she finally gets him to take the medicine. And of course, Jacob calms down. So then I'm talking to Natalie about all this and I call my mom. She goes, well, when can you come home? My mom thinks I'm just going to leave now and just come home. And I'm like, but for what? Like, what am I going to be there for? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean this in that I don't want to take care of my kid, but what I'm really trying to say is that this is me having a conversation with my own mother saying that you can handle it for a couple more hours. That's all we're talking about here, you know?
Right. This isn't a 9-to-5 job. This is you're gone for a few hours.
Yeah. This is essentially what I pay double digits to my, to a 26-year-old to handle on a, you know, 2-3 days out of the week when I'm gone, you know? And
right.
Again, because psychologically, I guess, I don't know, but I feel like I do need to say that in my mom's defense, she obviously had the desire and I didn't have the awareness, but the last time she touched a baby was, you know, 34 years ago with me. So at this point, she never had to deal with two at the same time. She only just had me. So it was a little bit of and I thought it would be fine. And I obviously was wrong. So we get to the weekend and it's okay. Like I finally get the kids starting to feel better. I had them humidifiers. I had medicine flowing. Everything.
Oh my gosh.
So the first three nights though that I was there, I would go do shows and then I'd come home. I'd be up all night with my 20-month-old and then be up all day taking care of the kids and then go do the shows. So I didn't sleep more than 2 hours in about 3 days. And it was the closest I would imagine of what it's like to go through Bud's training to be a Navy SEAL where they just sleep deprive you because when you just have, I didn't even realize it was happening because I just had Eye of the Tiger and I was focused and I didn't have time to bleed.
Right.
To quote, I think it's Arnold Schwarzenegger from what is that, Predator or something or Commando? I don't know. One of those movies. I don't have time to bleed.
Sex in the City.
That's it too. I think that's from the sequel. So we go through that whole garbage. And then going into the next week, Jack just won't really take naps very well. He's getting more and more cranky because he's tired. He's sleep deprived. I can't hold him and get him to sleep with me. I can't rock him to sleep. I can't, you know. So I just decide. I go, I've heard people do this. I'm going to let him cry it out. And that's what pushes my mom over the top because for the nap, he cries for about 10 minutes and then boom, it just goes silent. And he goes to sleep and he sleeps for about an hour and 45 minutes. So I was like, great. Well, I didn't have shows that night because there was a day off in between my 2 weeks that I had at these two different clubs in Denver. And so that night I go, okay, when we put him down, he's going to go to bed at his normal time. So I'm going to put him down in there and he's just crying. He's screaming. He goes for about 45 minutes. At one point he crawls out of the playpen outside there. So that freaks my mom out. And my mom tells me, she goes, I can't do this. And I go, what do you mean you can't do this? She goes, I can't take care of these kids by myself. And I said, okay. So I was like, I started to walk out of her bedroom and she was like, where are you going? And I said, well, I got to go think. And she's like, what are you going to think about? I go, well, I don't have another backup plan. Like you were it. I go, you just told me that you can't take care of my kids. So I got to sit down and figure out a plan because I got to go to work tomorrow night. And it's weird because what I do for a living, most people don't consider a job. It's not a real thing. So they don't, there's that kind of subconscious wiring that they have that it's like, oh, you just don't show up. So people don't laugh as hard that night or whatever. And in my mind, I'm sure I'm overplaying it, but in my mind, there's an aspect of that, you know, if I don't show up, that it ruins your momentum or it could of your career or it could kind of blacklist you a little bit, blah, blah, blah. It's no different.
Plus you made a commitment. You just want to fill your commitment.
It's
too.
No different than a regular job. If you just decide you're not going to show up, that reflects on you, you know, kind of a thing. Only the difference is instead of showing up 5 days a week, every week out of the month, I'm only there once a year. So that's the only time I get to make an impression. Mm-hmm. So I go downstairs and I have all these thoughts racing through my brain. I realize that you live there with your family, but I knew you had people visiting, but I didn't know what it was. So I was like, well, I couldn't really just drop off both my kids with the Bears family. I go, maybe I could just take Jack there since he seems to be the only issue. My mom can handle Jacob because he could communicate with them. I was like, you know, Riley's still young enough to where you guys know what it's like to have a little one around. But then I'm like, well, where do I sleep? Like, is it weird that I go back to my mom's? Or is it even weirder that I'm coming in the middle of the night to your house, you know? And
yeah.
And then Heath's girlfriend was there and in town. She has family. She volunteered to help the kids. I was like, I could go to sittercity.com, which is the website we use to find sitters. And I'm just spitballing all these ideas. And so then I figure out, I think I'm going to try to find a sitter, A, and then B, I'm going to ask Julia to come over. That was my plan. I think at some point I texted you in there going, hey, what would it be weird if I came to you?
We had a full house.
Yeah, and you were like, I'm chock full of people. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my mom was in town from Florida. Yeah, it was, yep.
So, and it was a perfect storm because at the same time, my grandfather was passing away. Like he was, and then, so, because normally I could just say, Dad, I'm going to put you on a flight. You're going to come to Denver, pick up the kids and fly them back home and take them. But my dad was the only one who had his shit together while my grandfather was passing away. Everybody else was freaking out. So he was needed there. So I called Natalie. I tell her what's going on. She goes, I'm just not going to go to work, and I'm going to come out, and I'll take care of the kids because I don't like the idea of somebody else being there. So I changed. This is at 10 o'clock at night in Denver. This is at midnight, Denver. So it's 10:30 for her. She finds out she's getting on a plane in 8 hours to come to Denver for at least a week. So I fly her out, and
this was her, and this was your wife's, like,
yes,
mini vacation that you had planned, and yep, she had a friend coming in from out of town or
as
something.
As a surprise, I flew her friend from high school down to spend New Year's Eve with her. She was going to have essentially like 11 days straight where she wasn't going to have to take care of a single person. I got her a day at the spa. As another part of her Christmas present, and I was like, this is perfect. And she got 3 days into it and had to be flown.
She flown
back home. And so I was like, ugh. And yeah, it was the weird part for me. And if my mom ever does decide to listen to this, I guess now would be a good time to say, I don't harbor any ill feelings towards you. And I'm sorry if this offends you, but it's the truth is that there was a moment where her dog, like, she got frustrated with me after, like, the first day because the kids weren't eating when she wanted them to eat. And she was like, you know, and my dad has these things when my kids are eating at their house. He'll always say, oh, I like to watch you eat. It makes me happy. And it's always a weird thing because I have this stupid thing in my mind that it's like, it almost sounds like you could create an eating disorder with that kind of behavior, even though I know he can't. But I'm just like, why do you give a shit? Like, just let it go. And they'll eat when they get hungry. I learned that.
Your mom.
This is my dad and my mom. Like, they both have this kind of element. So I said this to my mom. I go, what is it with you? Or she said something like, she goes, well, they're just not eating. And I said, well, what is it with you and dad and food? Like, they'll eat when they get hungry. And then my mom just snaps. And she's like, well, maybe it's because we work real hard for what we have and we don't like seeing it wasted. And I've never had, you know, any kind of confrontational aspect with my mom. And so I essentially, in so many words, I snapped at her and I was like, I go, hey, mom, if it's about that, I'll cut you a check. If that's what it's about, I'll pay for the food. Like, just let's move past this bullshit. I didn't say that to her, but I said, I'll cut you a check for the food. I don't want to be a burden on you. Like, and then she goes, well, I just think kids should eat at the same time every day. And I go, they do, but this is an hour or two time difference. I can't remember what it was or whatever, but I go, and they don't usually eat. She eats dinner at like 5 o'clock. They don't eat dinner until 6 or 6:30 when Natalie comes home from work. And
right.
So I go, that it is what it is. And they'll eventually adjust. We just fucking got here. And so then she didn't want to give the kids a bath. So I had to give the kids a bath before I went to go do show. So I'm in my show clothes, giving the kids a bath.
Uh-huh.
And then we're upstairs playing. And then she comes, I hear her go, oh no. And this is the part that was kind of weird for me, is that she comes upstairs and her dog Bella, she goes, Bella ate all the grapes, honey. What do I do? And I go, it's okay. Jack was done with them. She's like, no, grapes are poisonous to dogs.
Ugh.
And I was like, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to
You
want me to pump her stomach? And she was like, yes. And I knew she was kidding and she knew I was kidding. But it's just like, for me, it was a weird psychological dynamic where she doesn't understand how to feed and help out with the kids, but is hypersensitive to the needs of her dog. And that's where the collision of my parents being divorced and how me being kind of raised by my dad primarily just all came together in my 34-year-old brain, is that I was like, not only there was, we have next to nothing in common other than the fact that you birthed me, because you have this hyper like awareness and love for your animals, and all I see them are as animals. Like, I see them as no different than a freaking hobby. And I, not that I'm judging that. I know that there are people that treat their pets as a part of their family. I just wasn't brought up that way. I don't see it that way. And I'm just like, And then you add that to the juxtaposition of, like, you don't even know how to take care of your kid, your grandkids, which are people. Like, they, it's weird. And then the whole other, the rest of the 2 weeks after Natalie, when Natalie showed up, the kids, like, clamored onto her like they were prisoners of war. There were a couple of nights where I was leaving and the kids were, like, clamoring onto me, like, oh, we don't want you to go. And it was just really hard on me because I could, it's not my mom's fault because she wasn't given the tools to do it. But there was just this element where I had to just go, listen, guys, this is the situation we're in and everything's going to be fine. But my mom doesn't necessarily exude confidence, because when Natalie was to go back to the earache and sore throat thing, Natalie was saying, there's something wrong with him. And I go, there's nothing wrong with him, honey. I left that kid. I know what's going on. He woke up, had a sore throat. He got upset just like he normally does. But the difference is that there isn't someone like me or you there to go, hey, okay, message received. Knock it off. Take it down a notch. My mom does not exude confidence. She does not exude, I got this.
Right. And that's all that is 90% of a battle with a kid is, and I fight this fight in myself. Cause I am worst case scenario, bubble wrap dad.
Yeah.
I'm very much the opposite of you. So I really have to just say, hey, if I just pretend like I know what I'm doing, my kid's going to fall in line. I just have to pretend like I've got the control and I'm confident, and my wife is you, and I. Hey, once again, hey, you're the chick.
you son of a bitch. And stay frosty.
No, and I. You know, but it's like you have to, like, perspective. Take a deep breath and go, hey, this is for, you know, for your mom. I wish you could have just grabbed her and said, hey, listen, I need you to, like, lock it up for 3 hours. Yeah. And yeah, it's hard. And it sucks, but you gotta do me the solid. And it just sounds like you guys never had that, either didn't have that conversation or she just wasn't ready for that.
We had something close to that where I said, okay, you're going to be all right. And this was after the whole thing had happened with her dog. And again, she was really worried that her dog was going to be vomiting all night. Like, that's what was in her brain. And I go, are you going to be okay? She's like, no. And I said, well, if you need anything, call Natalie. And she's like, well, what's Natalie going to do? And I did. I put my hands on her shoulders. I turned her towards me, and I looked her in the eyes. I go, she's going to help you. That's what's going to happen. I go, there is nothing that is going to happen with these kids that she can't talk you through over the phone. I go, that's, it's really going to be easy. And she, when we kind of had the altercation where I'm like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do, and she was really upset and felt really bad, and she said something like, she goes, well, I'm just sorry. I feel bad, you know, or whatever. She said something to that effect, and I go, Mom, I said, it's okay. I go, I understand that you haven't seen a kid in 34 years. I understand I was the last baby. And I go, so it's, I mean, I can't lie and say I didn't think of it, but I just thought it would be fine. And it's not. I mean, really what happened is I had one kid who was sick. It gave it to the other kid. And then we went from sea level in Los Angeles to the mile high dry air of Denver. And
yeah,
it takes a while for sinuses. And in the middle of cold and flu season, it's not helpful that they just got dried out. And, you know, and
it also a problem that their mother isn't there? Like, I'm not trying to be
it's not
devil's advocate. I'm just saying it was that rough for them that their mom wasn't there.
No, I think that okay. the only, I
it
think
it seems like they're well adjusted that way, because yes. I know that they go to your dad's, they're yes. away. I totally get it. I just wanted to throw that out there.
My dad's commented that my kids are the only kids out of all of us that my brother's kids would get dropped off with my parents and they would be happy, but then when their parents came back to pick them up, they would cry because they didn't want to leave. My sister's kids would get would cry when they got dropped off because they didn't want to be left at grandma and grandpa's. And my kids were the only ones that didn't matter what was happening. Like, if they were getting dropped off there, that was fine, or they just kind of go with the flow.
That's awesome.
It's I don't know if it's really an achievement, or and I don't even think my dad meant it that way. I think it's
they're
just
confident.
Well, it's like this last trip though. Like, Jack got a little upset, but I know it's just because he was tired. And I walked out the door, and he was crying while my dad was holding him. When I walked out the door, and then I stood out there, and not even 2 minutes after I'd been out the door, he just stopped crying and was okay. But so, I mean, I don't know what it means. I don't necessarily think it means that they're confident. I just think that, like, it almost means that, well, we just get dropped off at a lot of places. Maybe, I don't know, but it doesn't happen that often, but I don't know. Here's what I know.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I mean, I travel, you know, I travel for a living, as do you. And my kid is literally, I can go for 2 days or I can go for a week. And all she has to do is say, "Where's Daddy?" And Shannon says, "Oh, he's went on an airplane. He'll, you know, he's working. He'll be back soon." That's all she needs to hear. And she's like, "Okay." And then she's good. And then yeah. I could be gone literally 2 days or 2 weeks, as long as she's given that answer.
That she's
because I always come back. And she's yeah. so it's not like it's for some reason she's got that. It just makes sense to her, which is awesome. So I think it might be similar for you and Natalie.
Yeah, it's a part of her normal life. I think as parents, we kind of get wrapped up in, and I talked about this a little bit last week, where I think it's so much awareness with like media and all that stuff that we start to, everything seems to be abusive if it's negative. You know what I mean? Like just because you're not there, and I don't know if you wrestle with this, I do, is that, or at least I used to, is that I used to think because I traveled for my job that I was somehow, hampering my kids or my relationship with them, that I was like, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. When in actuality, it's the same as, I remember when I was a kid, we went to Marine World and they had this tiger cub and they showed us this tiger cub and the lady holding it up was like, "Oh, this, you know, it's blind." And everybody was like, "Oh," and she goes, "No, there's no reason to be sad. As far as this tiger cub is concerned, this is how life is supposed to be." They don't, yeah. She doesn't know any different because she was blind from birth. Like she doesn't know the idea of seeing. So she's not sad about it. She just thinks, "Oh, well, you don't ever get to see. That's just how it works." And so in reality, I think that there's more situations like that with our kids that, you know, you travel, I travel, whoever travels, that the kids just kind of go, "Oh, okay." And that if anything, if they learn to be sad that you're leaving, that it might also be just kind of our guilt that we're carrying in our own brains that they kind of pick up subtextually. But if you could, but if you think about it, there are probably parents that travel that they don't even think twice about it, and the kid doesn't think twice about it at all because the parent's just like, "Well, it is what it is. Like, there's nothing we could do."
Yeah, it's that whole thing that I really have adopted that I think is huge. It's the same thing. If a kid falls and you're like, "You're okay, get up."
Yeah.
The kid's like, the kid thinks, "I'm okay. I'm going to get up."
Yeah.
It's those, and you see these parents, and it drives me batty. And grandparents. I don't want to. Yeah. So I've had people in my family do this. It makes me nutty. Where it's like, you know, my daughter will just like barely trip. And oh, are you okay? I'm like, you know what? No, you're fine. Come on, let's go. Keep moving. It's the same thing. Okay, I'm going. I love you. Oh, daddy. It's like, oh, it's okay. It's great. I'll be back. Okay. And after a couple times, I leave the house. It's like, peace out, dad. It really has become that because it's. I'm not going to do that. You know, melodramatic,
yeah.
Which I bet some people do that when they leave, and then all of a sudden they get kids that are.
Well, subconsciously, I think that you kind of want that. You kind of that when they get upset when you leave is a validation that they love you, and that whether you're aware of it or not, I think it's understandable that you would crave that and go, you know, so I know she just wants her mom. And I always put that on the mom kind of a thing because that's an empty nest type vibe. But yeah, I can get it.
I hate to say it. It's the same thing. It's exactly what – I mean, I don't let my kid watch Dexter, but it's the same thing. It's like if you're watching something, you know, suspicious with your kid and they look to you. And if so, if you're just watching, like, yep, that's just pretend. That's no big deal. Or, you know, that's not scary. It's just a person in a costume. And the kid's like, oh, yeah. It's when you're like, ooh, when my kid Halloween does not scare my kid at all because I refuse to be like, I refuse to scare my kid. I refuse to go, oh, this is a spooky, scary movie. I'm just like, oh, you know, oh yeah, he's dressed up like a ghost. So when trick-or-treaters would come, I'd be like, oh, she's a witch.
Yeah.
He's a ghost. Like that kid came with an axe in his head. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. He's got an axe in his head. And my daughter's like, yeah, he's got an axe in his head. I mean, they're just going to parrot what you do and what you say. So it's funny. If you really look at the way kids act sometimes, it's because that's how their parents have – and it's because it's just that the parents sometimes follow the easy route, which is cliche, which is, oh, you know, this is a scary witch, scary ghost, and all of a sudden you've got a kid that's scared of everything.
Right.
And that's do you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly because that's what I tell Jacob. I said people like – I told him about scary movies and scary things. I said people like to be scared just like when they go on roller coasters because he had been to like Disneyland or whatever. I go, they like to be scared like that. That's fun because they know they're going to be safe, but you kind of get to pretend like you're not because you're going really fast. I go – and I explain that to him, and I think he kind of gets it. And to kind of go back to your Halloween story is that – I had a moment where there was a dude in a full-size pickup, and he'd kind of did the cool thing when your kid's 12 or you're 12, and they turn their house into a haunted house. And yeah. So he's out there with a super creepy clown, and I had that first reaction when I see him, and he's sitting in his car, and he's jumping out, scaring people, making people scream, and I'm like, come on, man, why are you going to be fucking up my night, you know? But then I'm like, no, it's not about me. It's not. There are people obviously enjoying that, and, you know, I had to snap myself out of it, and I looked down at Jacob. He goes, look at him. He's a scary clown. And then that was it. And he doesn't care. And to go back to your Dexter point, I'm about to take this experiment to a whole other level. A couple days ago, it's going to be interesting. My poor son. I was playing a video game, and my son goes, is this your zombie show? And I said, no, this is just a video game Dad's playing. And he's like, oh, okay. And I said, why? Do you want to watch my zombie show? And he was like, yeah. And I go, do you don't think zombies are scary? And he was like, no. And
Walking Dead.
Yeah. And so I go, okay. I go, well, if you want to, I go, next time Dad's zombie show comes on, you and I could sit and watch it. And he's like, really? And I go, yeah. I go, Jack can't be around. That's all. I go, but if Jack's around, if Jack's sleeping or something, you and I can watch The Walking Dead. So I'm going to see how he reacts and if nightmares.
You can send your letters and emails to Justin at thedadpodcast.com.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to post the Southern California Child Protective Services number directly on the website and the Facebook so that people could program it for speed dial and try and time it for Sunday nights. That it happens. But the reality of it is, and like I've talked about multiple times, in my opinion, it really doesn't matter. And I use myself as the example. When I was probably 7, 8, 6, somewhere around there, my stepmom and my dad were newly, gotten together. My sister was having her birthday party. My dad thought it would be funny to pop in a porno while these 21, 20-something-year-old kids were walking around the house just to see who would stop. It blew up in his face when I was sitting in front of it, the only one paying attention to it. So he did exactly what you're talking about. He's like, okay, if I don't freak out, he won't freak out. So all he did was walk up to me and say, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm watching this movie. He's like, what's it about? I go, I don't know, but I think this guy is a king because all these girls are, like, taking care of him. But I got to be honest. I essentially said, it's not very good. Like, it's not a good movie at all. I didn't get the sexual connotation of it. I remember the imagery. Like, I remember the woman fellating him, and I have that picture in my brain. But I don't have any sexual hangups. I don't have any.
Right.
I'm not creeped out by that. You know what I mean? And at least as far as I know, I mean, it's kinky to me when I have doggy style sex. So how does that? That's me going, whoa, look at us. You know, and I know people that have much more sheltered upbringings that are like, really? You've only been with 4 other people besides your wife? That's it? What kind of, how is that fun for you? I've had a lot of pad thai, is what I'm saying. I never even got back the second page of the menu in the sexual.
Oh, it's time for some Ethiopian food. That is good stuff. It's amazing. Now, what if your dad walked in and was like, what? Oh, what do you want? No, you shouldn't. You can't.
It would have embarrassed me, or I would have felt bad. Like, I would have felt like I did something wrong, when in actuality, I didn't do anything wrong. It was his screw up. It was his mistake.
Yeah.
And I don't claim to be an expert. And obviously, I mean, people listen to the show. There are people that disagree with me. Like, what a fucking moron. I can't wait till his kid has nightmares. And he doesn't. I mean, he's still. And that's what I mean. As soon as he has his first nightmare with The Walking Dead or whatever, then I'll go, okay, well, maybe we'll wait a few years to watch the show. You don't have to. But again, I will address that issue. I think, and I don't know, I can't speak for the other side of the coin, is that in my mind, I think what happens is that it is a protective mechanism that parents have that say that there is only certain things that a kid can handle. And I think that a kid can handle whatever it is you want them to handle. That's honestly my opinion. Like, there's obviously aspects, like, obviously, I mean, here's my point. I started to say that my 4-year-old cannot grasp algebra, but the honest to God's truth, to take it out of the context of violence and media, everybody here knows that if you sit down every day with the goal of teaching your child advanced algebra, by the time they are 5 years old, they can have a phenomenal understanding of algebra. And I think it's the exact same thing, is that I've been telling him from day one, because he got freaked out. The first movie that freaked him out was Zombieland. He saw the beginning of it, and he was 2, and he was just, like, staring at it. Now he's like, Justin. And I kind of slowly turned it off and acted like we were going to move on and do something else, because I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. But obviously it was concerning to him. But he was too young to where I could communicate with him. So that's when I was like, okay, well, I'll wait till you, but I never stopped watching whatever it was that I was watching. And when I was a kid, I remember not wanting to see, like, my brother was way into the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. He had a bunch of friends over, and I think, and did like a marathon of them. And I remember not liking those movies and not being interested in them. But I was always exposed to them. But I grew up to where now I'm not afraid of them. I don't seek them out. I'm not obsessed with them, but I don't shy away from them either. But I know mm-hmm. people who have had, and I've used this example a lot, is that I know people that have had the villain parts of Disney movies fast-forwarded in their upbringing, yeah. and they are extremely sensitive to things that are happening in their life. And mm-hmm. I talked about it last week with Cindy, where it just my philosophy is that the real world is not interested in what you are sensitive about. That nobody is out there other than you, whatever loved one you end up, you know, tying the knot with. Nobody really gives a shit about your hangups. And I have come across a lot of people, especially managing this building, that think that it is everyone else's responsibility to manage their hangups. I had a woman who told me, I'm extremely afraid of spiders, so you need to fumigate the building once a month for spiders so that I don't have to confront my fear. And I go, here's what's not going to happen. The owner is not going to pay for your fear. If you want to pay for it, that's the correct way to handle it. You right. want to shell out the money because it's your fucking problem, go nuts. Right. Nobody's going to stop you there. But when you make your problem my problem, it's not okay. It's
now, here's a quick story. This'll kind of take it to another level. My daughter's in preschool, uh-huh. and one of the moms of one of her classmates was 6-7 months pregnant. And they lost the baby.
Oh.
And very sad. Yeah. And Riley came home and said, Ben is her classmate. Said, Ben's baby died. That's all. So I Yikes. Guess the little boy, now my daughter's 3 going on 4. So this is preschool. We're still in preschool. So she said, Ben's baby died. So I guess Ben, the little boy, is walking around talking about it to
yeah.
his 3-year-old classmates. And so she comes home and she's like, Ben's baby died. Is mommy and dad? And then she was like, it's sad. Are mommy and daddy going to be okay? Asking if me and my wife are going to be okay. And we're like, we're fine. We're not going anywhere. I mean, it was just heartbreaking because she doesn't really understand it. So we just said, yeah. And so we were very clear. Yes, it's very sad. You know, Ben's mommy lost their baby, but it's okay. And she's okay. And, you know, we love you. And we, you know, we're just talking through it. We're not like looking at each other and going, we're going to ignore this, or we're just going to sugarcoat it. We're just saying, you know, yes, it's sad. You know, we're saying, yeah, it's sad. This is sad for Ben's mom and Ben's dad, but you know, they're going to be okay. And it's okay. And you know, we're not going anywhere. So her big fear was that we were going to disappear, which was kind of sweet and sad, but it's that whole how do you respond to, it's how you respond to those moments is kind of what defines you, and it kind of shapes your kid, I think. I mean, again, I know you say this all the time, and it's so true. We're not experts; we're just spitballing life here, but it's mm-hmm. you know, we can just do our best, and that's what I think is really important: is that you just be open and honest. It's just open and honest communication. The minute you hide something or try to pretend like something is not what it is when you get into trouble, is when kids get jacked up.
I think so. Yeah. And it's my new kind of thing, because, well, two things. Number one is that I had a similar situation when my grandfather passed away, and my dad was, I was going to go visit my grandma, and my son Jack looks identical to my father when he was a baby. So my grandma has a kind of a special attachment to him because it's like a little time warp for her. And mm-hmm. so my, you know, in so many ways, it was kind of like, hey, if grandma could hold Jack and kind of use him as a blankie, you know, kind of thing, this could help distract her, help her feel a little bit better. But I was confronted with the idea of saying, well, we're going to go to grandma's house. He liked playing with my grandfather. So I just wanted to confront it to ahead of time with my son. So he knew that
your older son,
yes.
Jacob.
I was like, he couldn't say, where's Grandpa Jesse? Like, where is he? Because I didn't want it to be my grandmother that while she's dealing with mourning and the loss of her, you know, her soulmate, like her, that's been her forever. 60 plus years they've been together, and that she's going to have to be the one to rationalize this to my kid. And and wrestle all that. And so I sat down with him and I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And I didn't make it like a big deal. We were already kind of sitting around and I just kind of go, hey, oh, there's something I got to tell you real quick. And which I think is kind of laughable that your dad's grandpa died. But I said, do you remember Grandpa Jesse? And he said, uh-huh. And I said, well, Grandpa Jesse passed away. He's dead. He's not with us anymore, is exactly how I phrased it. And I said, so we're going to go visit Grandma Lenny. I go, and the reason I'm telling you this is because it's really not nice to ask where Grandpa Jesse is. So I wanted you to know now that he's not there because he died. And I go, do you understand that? And he was like, okay. And he goes, yeah. And then I said, do you have any question? Or I said, are you sad? Does that make you sad in any way? And he looked at me and he was like, no. And I said, that's fine. That's totally fine. I said, Dad's not sad either, actually. And then he said, Natalie goes, do you have any questions? And he sat there for a minute and he goes, do they still have the balls and the trucks there, the toys? And I said, yeah, that's all still there. And he goes, okay, we're good. Everything is fine, which it's interesting because it kind of teaches you, it kind of almost flies in the face of my point, is that it kind of tells you where his brain is and that he can't really process that. He doesn't really know what's going on. But I do think that what he can process is that clearly I'm not an emotional basket case and I'm not losing my brain. And to an example of the opposite of that is that when my mother-in-law lost her ex-husband, she lost her frickin' mind. Like, she was just a mess and she wanted us to bring the kids over there. And I was like, no, I don't. My kids don't need to be around to watch you blubber like an idiot over your ex-husband's passing. Like, that's not okay. And I don't mean to say blubber like an idiot in this context that she can't mourn him. What I'm saying is, you're not, it makes you an idiot that you want my kids to sit there and stare at you do that. Like, that, I'm like, no, that's just stupid. Who wants that to be, you know what I mean? And it's a different context of them, her wanting them to be a distraction and all that, you know, bullshit. And so we go there and the only thing my son said is that when it's actually really cute, is that King of the Hill was playing because they put on the Cartoon Network. And yep. King of the Hill was playing late at night. And there's that character, the old man character. I can't remember whose father he is or somebody's dad. But he goes, that guy looks like Grandpa Jesse. So it was cute. We all laughed and everything like that. And I had a reaction of like, ooh, like I thought we dodged it. But my grandma laughed and everything was fine. And we've been over there since then. And he goes over and plays and has a good time. And so, yeah, I don't know. There was another thing I was going to say, but as usual, I forget. I forget when I go off and go.
I mean, this is a great topic. I don't think you've ever talked about is how kids deal with, you know, with true, you know, tragedy. It's you know, that this was the first thing I'm sure we'll have to experience it at some point here. And, you know, she's only, you know, she's going to be four here shortly. So it's going to happen. And it's like, how do you, what's the right way? And I guess you just have to be, however you deal with it is how you deal with it. It's just a matter of trying to be positive, but also being real and being honest. I think that's important.
Well, it's interesting that when you were telling, you know, your situation with Riley and stuff, that like, I was like, man, that's a lot. Like, I even had a little bit of a reaction of like, what's this kid, you know, blattering around, you know, preschool about this stuff? Cause then it's an unintentional circumstance for all the other parents. Like, it's a much greater example of my bitch and moan about preschool, where it's like, I go in to drop my son off and then I hear some kid with fucking whooping cough and, you know, in the next room, I'm like, what fucking asshole dropped their kid off with tuberculosis for me to deal with 3 weeks later? Like, that's just bullshit. Why you gotta fuck up my weekend just because I feel like I want to post my number and say, hey, if your kid's sick, let me know. I'll drop my kid off at school, pick your kid up and take care of him so that nobody else has to deal with your fucking sick kid, because evidently your job doesn't allow you to stay home and take care of your kids. But that, to deal, like, that's an emotional thing that you guys just got dumped on you when you pick her up. What did you learn at school today? I learned babies die. It's like, holy fuck. Like,
yeah. Because this mom was coming to pick up her son at preschool for weeks and weeks and months with a big belly. And then all of a sudden, you know, she's shares with, you know, other parents and with the teachers that they lost the kid. And I mean, my gosh, it's just so much. So, and then who knows, but I mean, you know, you can't turn things completely off when your kid's around. So if you and your significant other are sad and the kid's like, why are you sad? And it's like, well, we lost this baby. And then he goes to school and he's like, yeah, we lost it. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's not like they're, you got to be careful, but at the same time, you can't completely, you've got to, if you can't just walk around sad, and you, if your kid doesn't know why you're sad, if you're just being really depressed, mm-hmm. that's got to be hard on the kid too. You know, you want to tell them why you're not doing well. You're not. So gosh, it's a thin line. I don't know.
Yeah, that just brought up an interesting thing for me is that in hearing you say that, I realized that I don't handle I handle death differently from everyone, and I do because my father. When my father was making these funeral arrangements for my grandfather, the guy at the funeral parlor, whatever you call parlor, is such a weird name, funeral parlor, because isn't a parlor another name for a bar? Like that's like
Yeah, I guess. I guess parlor is the name of a certain kind of room.
Well, the two names are shitty. Like, you have funeral home. Like, that's – he's not going home. Who wants their home to be 6 feet underground? That's bullshit. Or to go into a furnace. That's not homely. That's a bullshit excuse. Or a funeral parlor, like, oh, well, he's passed away, but he's going to go have drinks with Dean Martin. Like, that's bullshit. But –
Or in the Wild West.
Yeah, exactly. Probably what my grandfather would have wanted. Him and the Duke sharing a scotch. Which, on a side note, I don't know if I shared this already, but one of the best things. My grandparents were known as being uber religious and in a very conservative church. And when cleaning up, as you always do, cleaning up all the things when someone passes or whatever, they were cleaning out my grandfather's desk and they found a bottle of tequila and a bottle of brandy that he had hidden in there. And drinking is strictly forbidden within their religion. But my dad knew. This is what was always so cool about my dad's relationship with my grandfather. My dad knew he had probably had a drink somewhere or something, but everybody else was like, what is this doing here? Why would this ever be here? He must be using it for antiseptic. Like, he's fucking in the Civil War.
And a skin mag.
Yeah.
Why not? Live a little.
Oh, damn it. It's so funny that he had that and everybody's just like, well, what? And but me and my dad were like, well, yeah, it makes sense. Why not? He'd have a hit every now and then, you know, but...
God bless him, I say to that.
But my dad said, the guy told him, he's like, well, you have a very unique opinion of death, you know, because he deals with it on a regular basis. And for whatever reason, my dad's way of handling it was something he had never really come across. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, I don't like the idea of looking at it, well, our way is the right way, because that's not fair to people who use their emotions to, you know, process things and they get more emotional about it. And that's when I realized is that I think we also have this instinct as parents that when you have a kid, you try to be what you want to be, like, or you what you want your kids to be, instead of just finding comfort in your own skin, maybe a little bit, and maybe just going, this is how I do things, and my way is okay. And I know that there's going to be these elements where it's like, well, I want to push education because, you know, that wasn't pushed when I was a kid, and that's, you know, but I don't know. Maybe there's an element that what we should all strive to do is kind of just find a comfort within our own self and be able to realize that our kids are going to kind of be like us, and that's fine because we're good people, and that's all that it is, and not putting so much in trying to say, oh, well, if they eat this and they don't eat that, and then they don't see this and see that, and we don't talk about this, but we talk about that. Because I realized recently that I'm okay with him watching people die, but if a sex scene came up on a movie, I was like, ugh, that's uncomfortable. Like, I'm like, oh, crap, I really screwed this up. But then I kind of realized, like, well, why? Like, why not? Even though he's four, he's not going to have the thoughts of going, yeah, I need to get my fuck on. he's gonna be sitting there. Like, if I may have a weird hangup about sex, then he's going to probably grow up to be ashamed of it or whatever. And I don't want him to do that. I can't imagine him sitting with his wife and her saying, what if we had sex every day for a month? And he's like, I can't even imagine. I don't want that bullshit for him. You know what I mean?
I don't understand. I mean, this is a good point. I don't understand people who they're like, yeah, my kid only organic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to blend this food, but I'm going to go eat McDonald's and, you know, smoke and eat like shit. It's like, wait, what? You're like, you know, oh, no lactose, no gluten for your kid, but you're going to go eat like shit. What? I don't know. That makes zero sense to me. I mean, I don't, you know, I understand, like, oh, it's my kid, I got to take care of him. But, you know, take care of yourself first.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? That drives me nuts for the people that are so, so type A about their food their kids eat. But then they eat like shit, don't exercise, smoke. Really?
Or just be comfortable with eating junk food and know that that's what your kid's going to eat too. I mean, unless you're 487 pounds and need a forklift to get out of your house, I don't think there's any real issue. Like, they're going to have the same genetics.
Here's what I think. Why not eat a little bit better yourself?
That's true.
If you're like forcing, oh, this kid's got to have a vegetable on their plate. Well, yeah. You know what? So do you, fatty. I'm not calling you
I know.
I'm just saying.
That's why I laugh, so that people also know that it's not meant to be real.
Wait, say it again?
That's why I laugh, because I wanted to make sure people knew that it's not real, because I know you, and you're not like getting up, you're not getting Nazi about people that are overweight, but you're just trying to make a point, you know, like, yeah.
Totally. I see parents, you know, smoking in their car with a kid in the back seat, that drives me batty. Yeah. So then it's like, it can't go the other way either. And it's, I think the same thing with junk food. You can't give your kid junk food, you know, three meals a day either. I mean, you know, gosh, there's both sides of the coin here. But
well, I'm a prime example of that, where I, you know, they eat a lot of cookies and stuff, but we still buy organic milk. Like, that's what we do in the Worship House, is that they'll go to McDonald's and shit, but we buy organic milk.
Do you drink the organic milk?
Uh-huh. I drink organic 2%, and my kids drink organic whole milk, and that's the slice of hypocrisy. Yeah, that's the slice of being a hypocrite in the Worsham family. There, now I said it. I'm a fucking redneck. I don't know shit.
You're Modesto. Yes. This is good. Yep. This is good. So let's button up your Denver trip. So your wife comes out. Was it awkward? Was your wife like seething at your mother, or was your wife like, this is just the way it is?
No, she was frustrated. There was one moment when we were, because my grandfather looked like he wasn't going to make it through the weekend. So we were trying to plan, how are we going to get from Denver? We were going to fly back to Sacramento so that we could be there. And then I found out there wasn't going to be a funeral. Like, my grandma didn't want a funeral for him.
He passed away when you were in Denver?
Yeah, he passed away while I was on stage at the Denver Comedy Works. About 10 minutes into my set, I got a call from my dad, and he said, well, your grandfather, he passed away or whatever. And then it's weird that I'm not weird about death, but there was a part of me that was like, oh, it's kind of cool that I was on stage making people laugh. And I was thinking about him because I knew that it was close, and I was hoping that's not fair. I wasn't really hoping I could go see him. I had no desire to see him in a diaper and gray and, you know, with a foot in his grave. I just thought it was cool that I was doing essentially what was influenced by him. He's the reason why I like to make people laugh, because when I was a kid, I saw what he could do with people. And it's been really funny it's in a sad way, but my grandma has talked a lot about people that she, you know, then she has to deal with the bullshit of people calling every other day and going, how's he doing? And then she has to be the one that says, every time somebody says, how's he doing? She's like, well, he died. And then they have to dump their bullshit on her. And, you know, there's a couple people that they just liked him so much that they can't talk to her anymore because he was so happy and so fun, and they made him laugh all the time. And so that's why they can't connect with it. But it's an interesting thing that I learned from him at a very young age, at how humor can really touch people and really make their lives a little bit better, to sound really heavy handed and maybe maudlin is the word I'm thinking of. But yeah, so we did that whole thing. And the only thing that I think is kind of, the only thing that kind of is funny that I think is funny is that so Natalie was talking about how we're trying to make these flight arrangements, and how because she took this time off, she didn't have paid time off to do a special trip that she was going to do for my birthday. We're also taking a cruise together in May that she had kicked out all of her paid time off for that now, and she probably wasn't going to have enough time to earn it back up. And then I had to pay to fly her out there, and I had to pay to change her friend's flight, and I had to get a rental car and all this stuff. And so essentially it cost me more than my paycheck for those 2 weeks for all these changes. And my mom never said, hey, sorry you had to go through all this, or hey, here's a little bit of money, I hope this helps in any way, shape, or form. And I was telling my dad, and my dad was the one who kind of saw this, because it's who he is or whatever. He's like, did she offer to pay for the flight? She was also supposed to pay for Jacob's flight out there.
Right.
And she didn't pay for any of that. And my dad was like, man, that's bullshit. I'd give that bitch an invoice, is what he said.
Oh, man.
And then so we come home. Ooh. And to add to it, the finality of it, which I just think is funny. I'm not really mad at my mom. I'm over the anger of it. And there never really was anger at her. It's just it's like somebody else went through this, and I'm laughing about what they went through. Because it's not really personal to me. I'm not visceral about it, I guess. But she sent me a birthday card. And my mom always buys me presents for Christmas and for birthday. And I never buy her anything because I'm just not a gift giver, I guess. And She always sends me something, but the one time she cost me about $1,000, I get a card that just says "Love Mom," like nothing else but just "Love Mom," not a $20 bill, not a video game, nothing. And it gets better. So about a month and a half after this happens, I get a check in the mail from her for $163. And I'm like, that's such a fucking weird number.
Hey, now.
And I send her a text message. And every time she sends something, she always is like, hey, did you get this? And so I wanted to beat her to the punch. And I said, hey, thanks for sending the check for Jacob's flight. You didn't have to do that. Because that's the only thing I could think of that she was paying for. Well, what it was for was that while I was there, she said she wanted a Blu-ray player, so she sent me to Best Buy to buy her a Blu-ray player with her credit card. Like, I could just walk in and pay for it with her credit card, and they wouldn't let me, and I've also bought her a Universal remote. So I told her, I said, I didn't say these words, but I knew I'd never bought her a Christmas present or a birthday present. So I said, well, here, this is a Christmas present for you. I got it, no problem. But I left her the receipt in case she didn't like the Universal remote. So she was paying me back for the Christmas present. So instead of paying for Jacob's $400 flight and giving me a birthday present, she gave me $160 to pay for the Christmas present.
Ouch. You should send her a check for $67.43 and say this is for your next trip to the grocery store.
You're welcome.
For the chicken nuggets that Jacob and Jack didn't eat on your schedule.
And the grapes that poisoned your dog. This one's
and by
on
the
me.
Way, the dog never got poisoned, right?
No, the dog never even threw up. It's fine. Well, and that's the thing is that I'm sure that there is some kind of urban legend, and maybe there's somebody who's listening like, no, that's fucking true. But like my dog... People have these hang-ups about animals. My dog ate bushels of grapes through his entire life. And then one time we went out to lunch or something, and I left one of those ginormous, like, movie-sized special dark chocolate bars on a TV tray, not thinking. And then I came home. The dog had eaten the whole thing and the wrapper. Never a problem. No problem. Dog didn't die. Nothing happened, you know. But there's elements of the dog's health that were prevalent through its entire life that she knew about, that she could say, well, this is why he was doing that. And I'd also just found out that he had a tumor that had to be removed, which this is the wrong thing for the guy who doesn't think the dog is part of his family. Is that? And now he's living with my mother-in-law, and that's a whole fucked out story that is stupid. But Natalie got a call from her mother and said that, you know, we have to take Rocky to the vet. You know, he's got a tumor. And so I said, great, put him down. Let him go. Let him leave the world. He's been around for 10 years. Great. I'll pay the $250 to have him put down. Well, the doctor decides that he's fine. He doesn't know he's sick. So he removes the tumor. And this is a very good vet. So it's not like he was trying to rip me off, I guess. But he didn't know he was ripping me off. So I get a bill for $1,086 to remove a tumor for a dog I don't even see. I don't pet. He's just existing over there for me to pay for food for and all this bullshit.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, God, I would have just put a bullet in his head. But
no, stop.
But then again, so if you don't want to call Child Protective Services, now you can call PETA and send them my email address and tell
you
them
are on fire
tell
right
them
now.
That I'm a fucking dickhead and that is fine. So yeah, I think that's everything with the Denver story. That's the good times with that.
I mean, and it was right at it was the coldest part of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not used to that. Your kids aren't used to that. And then you can't take your kids out and burn energy.
Nope.
That's one thing that's hard, living in this climate is, with my kid is finding stuff for them to do inside. I mean, during the summer, it's like, go outside, let's run and play. But boy, when it's super snowy, super cold, you know, it makes life a lot more difficult. So I understand that, you know, you weren't able to go off, and especially if they're sick too. It's what a mess. You can't even take them outside for some sunshine. And
yeah.
Oh man.
Well, the
rough.
Last time my mom also might be going through some stuff, because the last time we were there, she had all these things planned, and it was the same kind of time of year. Because I always end up in Denver around, you know, November, December for whatever reason with my bookings. And this time she had nothing planned. When Natalie was there, she's like, well, let's take the kids to the aquarium. And so, but I paid for the aquarium. I paid for everything.
So, well, so. when that one time you came out a few years ago, and I went to your mom's house, and it was during the summer, and we did a pool.
Yeah.
But you had a pool, and we grilled, and those kids had a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it normally was. But, you know, that's in my mom's defense. She might be going through something for all I know. And I'm not that close to her, so I might be being insensitive.
Again, for me, it's that whole thing of like, you know, and I, I know I have to give myself these pep talks, Justin, where if I'm going through a rough patch with my kid or with my wife, it's like, you know what? You got it in 2 weeks. Or work, too. If you're having a real rough time with work, mm-hmm. you just have to go, listen, in 2 or 3 weeks, this is, you know, this is not going to be that big of a deal. Right. Like you just got to put your head down and mow through it. And
right.
so many people in this day and age, for some reason, don't do that. They're like, this is it. I'm quitting. Mm-hmm. You know, people quit jobs. People, you know, it's like your mom basically quit.
Yeah.
She on you.
Shut down.
Where, but I bet 3 weeks later she was like, I bet you she was like, man, I should have sucked it up, and I bet you I could have got. You don't think so?
No.
She's
not wired that way. Okay. And that's the other hard part about this whole thing is that she also called my aunt or her sister to ask for advice on what to do with my fucking kids, and that really just set me off because this is a chick who, God love her, again, my mom's mom is a real fucking piece of work. She's just a cunt of a bitch, just a fucking Whoa. Evil devil woman. Honestly, I mean that. Like, she's just evil, just vile evil. And so that's kind of what I tell myself, that it's like, it's not really on my mom. Like, you know, I'm sorry. I know that there are women that are offended by that word, and I apologize to that, but it's the truth with this chick. You know, it's honest, it's deserved. And so that's what she did this to these girls, and that's why they have the tools that they have. So it's not really on my mom to a certain extent. But she calls my aunt, and my aunt is like, well, he's probably teething. And I'm like, what the fuck does she know? She's never even seen this kid. Not to mention the fact she's got her kids, has had to live with her forever, and then had to call her in the middle of the night because his I think his like 12, 9, and 7-year-old were home alone while he was getting hammered at a bar, and he got pulled over for a DUI. So he calls her at 3 in the morning, say, hey, can you go take care of the kids? Because I'm getting taken down to the hooscow. And then, you know, it's like, that's who you're calling for parental advice. And she's like, well, she has more experience. She has more grandkids than I do. I go, mom, I have more kids than you do, and I'm right fucking here. You can ask me about my kids. You don't have to call somebody in another fucking state. And that really pissed me off. That's the only part that I was really angry at my mom, that not only did she kind of just check out when my parents split up and just leave, but then also doesn't give me the credibility and respect that I deserve with my own goddamn children. That's the part that I'll fucking scream in her face for. Which will probably never happen, in all honesty. But yeah. Well, good times. Good times.
Well, comedy podcast.
Comedy podcast. Uplifting. So everybody remember, tell your mother to fuck herself and enjoy. Happy holidays, everybody. Stay home.
I gotta be honest. The reason why this podcast is so successful and why you get these, you know, very loyal listeners is because you're real and everyone is dealing with the exact same stuff. You know, people that, you know, we're starting to live in an age where everyone will only put positive stuff on social media, mm-hmm. on Facebook. It's like, and everything is everything's hunky dory. Everything's perfect, but it's like, why not be real? Why not, you know, peel back those layers and say, yeah, you know what? It's not always perfect. It's not always great. Being a parent isn't easy.
No,
being a,
bullshit.
You know, That's why this is so good. I mean, that's why it's necessary. And I bet you. I mean, I was with you, you know, in Denver for a little bit. I went to go see your show with my wife, and then I gave you a ride back to your place. And at that point, Natalie was on a flight.
She was there.
She was there. Yeah, that's right. I saw her as well. I saw her at the show. And yeah, you kind of dumped this on me, and I was just like, man. And I could tell that you just felt good talking to another person besides, you know, your dad or your wife, like just a guy. And it's like, we actually had like, what, an hour of guy time driving back to your mom's place.
Yeah.
You know, that's important. It's
well,
important
for me, that's also, I've learned lately that's how I kind of process things. Like I have to keep saying them and get them off my chest. Otherwise it makes me feel weird and I get sad and all that stuff. So I think that's what kind of drove me to doing a podcast to begin with, is because by talking shit out, even if it is by myself or with another person, like, it makes me feel a little bit better. My honest opinion still of parenting is that it's absolute bullshit. Like, it is just everything that you're told, everything about it. Like, I was talking about it with Cindy last week that I'm recently now, like, it blows my fucking mind that there isn't a child development class being taught in every high school across the nation, that there is nothing that is being told or talked about what is probably the single most important thing that reflects upon society as a whole. Like, I'm not saying that you need to teach people how to parent. I'm saying that we have enough of an understanding of how psychologically kids work and develop and grow that why isn't that common knowledge? Why is it that I know more about a quadratic equation than I do about what stage of development my child is? That should be secondary knowledge for all of us. And I think it's because we it's growing from a society where there was parents that were just kind of involved. And now the culture and the society is transitioning where mom and dad are working. And so everybody's kind of working it out on their own and all that stuff. And I just think it's a real disservice that our public education system is doing to themselves, really. I mean, that to not have something in there, something in place that tells people not how. I know that it's a weird fucking thing to get up on a soapbox and tell people what to do with their kids. But if you can understand what's going on in your kid's brain, then you can decide based on an educated opinion instead of just going around going, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm hoping this is works and doing what you think your parents did right and doing the opposite of what you think they did wrong. That's a fucked up system, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the hardest thing is that people will just – you don't get that from other parents. Other parents, for some reason, only wanted to talk about the magic and how wonderful and how perfect. I know this was the original conceit of your show was this is not all puppy dogs and rainbows.
Yeah.
You know, it's dirty diapers and it's you know, you're living in this. But, you know, there are moments of what, you know, moments of the week, of course. But at the same time, how come other parents don't say, yeah, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard on a relationship. It's hard on a marriage. It's hard, you know, on your work. It's hard on you lose a lot of yourself because you're so focused on your kid. And those are the kinds of things that if you told that to a 22-year-old or, you know, or an 18-year-old and really give them some perspective, but all you know, these teen mom shows that are kind of celebrating, I think I've actually never watched one. Have you ever watched one of those shows?
I have.
Are they celebrating the fact that
no,
you know,
it's one of those things that there's a misconception of it in that they're not. And I think even Dr. Drew himself has kind of talked about it and proven that there's been a lot of teens that have seen the show that are like, wow, that's fucked up. And that they've seen a decline in teen pregnancy, which is the actual intent of the show. But what the bad intent of the show is that what happens is you get these teen moms that are seen on tabloids and they become celebrities. And it looks like we're hoisting them on our shoulders like they're Tom Landry or whatever. And that's not – I don't think – I'm sure there is an element of that. But it's not really – I don't think it's really the intent or the situation or the case, I guess, is the word I was trying to think of. So,
yeah.
But I do agree there is an element of your point that I think is valid where it's like, you know, you think, oh, well, if they do it and they've got a TV show, they must be – you know, it's so great to be them, you know. I agree. I wish that everybody would just kind of – because it's hard. I think what it is that you kind of wrestle with the idea of it's like if you talk about what's hard about it, then you're failing. You're supposed to – it's the one thing in our society where we get kind of British where we just kind of go, well, everything's fine. You don't talk about your problems. You don't say – because if you do, then it's because – then that means that you're failing. And because nobody knows that other people are struggling, then they always think that they're the lone wolf. At least that's the response that I've found that's come out of people that listen to this show is that either A, they're successful parents and are doing fine and like to listen to how much I'm struggling, or B, that they like that the fact that they feel like they're not alone, that, oh, okay,
right.
Somebody else is having the same thought, having the same problem, and it's okay to sit there and go, I love this kid more than anything in this world, but Jesus fucking Christ, I wish I could have 3 weeks of my old life back. I really honestly miss the shit out of just being able to get balls deep in my wife on a whim.
Do you know this person? This is the person that drives me nuts. How are you? Or how's the kid?
Yeah.
Or and then you're like, man, hard because this happened, and they go
yeah,
glossy
they
eye
over, yeah.
And they don't, and they're like, wait, you were just supposed to say everything's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't ask me then, because I'm going to, you know, my wife and I both, we're not afraid to be like, yeah, it was a rough week because X, Y, and Z happened and this and that, where all they really want you to say is, oh, being a parent's awesome.
It's great. It's such a blessing. Such a blessing. That's my new thing. My new thing is I'm going to have a fuck you chambered for people when I say, oh, you had a kid? Yeah. Oh, it's such a blessing. And the only thing that I think would be a contingency is if it's people that had to go through like the in utero and all that process, you know what I mean? But if you just if you just shit out a kid on your honeymoon night and you're, you know, you're talking about, oh, it's just such a blessing, I just went, ah, fuck you. And that's not be your friend, but just go, come on, I know what's fucking going on. You've had pee in your mouth. That's not a blessing. That is not God touching you on the shoulder when somebody pisses in your mouth or vomits all over you or pushes you to the point of exhaustion. You're like, well, you just shut the fuck up. That's not a blessing, asshole.
You thought it was an M&M on the couch and you ate it and it turned out to be a piece of shit. Dustin Worsham, thank you very much. But you know what? That's your fault because you're like, I'm going to eat this. I'm not sure if it's an M&M. I'm going to eat it.
You know what I like about that? That's another example of me being manly. I feel like that's a manly thing to do. Like, I'm just going to, you know, this is food.
Wait, that's feces.
Yeah, that's not food.
But then
at
you know
all.
What? You just kept on going on with your day, which is total. That's parenthood right there. It's like, moving on.
Yeah, I'm going to be all right. You know what? Oh, my gosh. Well, look at that. Look at the time flying. An hour 20.
I don't want it to end ever.
Hour 20. We did it. Let's do some moments of the week, yeah?
I don't want it to end.
You don't want it? What do you want to talk about? We could bang out.
No. Well, you know what?
Yeah, I shit on your point. No, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Every time we do this, it gets heavy, and then we're like, next one's going to be comedy. And then it's like never. It's never had. This is our fifth or sixth episode together, it's never just balls out funny. So next show, Justin,
balls
bring
out
it funny.
Well, here's the thing. I think we started off very strong, and I don't know if we always do that, but I was very happy. And then I kind of brought it down with my mom bullshit, but I think that's still laughable. Everybody's
necessary gonna conversation and real. And again, that your listeners are gonna be like, oh, I love that story because they can relate.
I hope so. If not, that's okay. But let's do some moments of the week, yeah? All right.
No song.
No song. Well, here. Okay. All right. Listen, I'm sorry. I will.
No, it's magic. No, you don't need to put it in post.
No, it's one less step that I have to do, so shut your face.
Put the song in right here.
You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So my moment of the week, I'm actually going to go back in time from even before the one that I did last week, is my son and I have been playing a lot of video games together, which has been really fun, Jacob and I, and we finished all the Sly Cooper games, and then now we're playing the Ratchet and Clank games, and it's fun that we get to hang out, and it's been really nice and sweet that there's this element of when he kind of sits next to me, he likes to sit next to me and kind of cuddle up to me, and I get to feel that. It's really weird. My kids and my wife are the only people in this world that can like kind of touch me, and it relaxes me, and it just kind of makes me go, oh. My wife we've been together for damn near 17 years, and she's just now realized in the last 6 months that if she rubs my back when I'm being a dick, that I just kind of calm down. And it's like the Crocodile Dundee thing that he did to the water buffalo, like the wah, 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 like it hypnotizes me. But
you're a savage beast.
I am.
With a vagina.
I am. I'm an angry lioness and in heat. But we'll get sex. So anyway, it's been just really cute, and we passed the controller back and forth. And the other thing, my other moment is, it's kind of a moment with Jack and also with Jacob, is it's a new thing that I've kind of discovered, is that I kind of, whenever I get frustrated, I tend to lash out. So now I've tried to make my frustration a little more fun. And it's been really funny for me, is that my new thing that I do with my kids is I go, God damn it, will you knock this shit off? You know, and I yell at them. And but they could tell that there's an air of like funniness to it, and they look at me and they laugh, and it's really cute to me. I know other people would be like, "What are you doing?" And I go,
"Oh,
and I would
no."
Like Jacob started to whine and cry about going to bed. I go, "So help me God, if you don't stop whining, I'm gonna put my foot up your ass. Get your ass upstairs right now!" And he just breaks out laughing. He's like, ha, 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 ha. And he thinks it's so funny. And Jack giggles all the time. He thinks it's really funny. And it just, it's really cute to me. It makes makes me giggle and happy on the inside. The funny thing about that was one time he was eating dinner and Jacob was doing something and I go, "You son of a bitch." And I think I talked about this on the premium the premium episode with Bill, which by the way is available at thedadpodcast.com in the store for $3. Thanks for supporting the show. But I said, "You son of a bitch." And he laughed and he goes, "Dad said you son of a bitch." Or he called me a son of a bitch. He said to his mom, that's what he said. It was really funny. So those are my moments. Your turn.
Oh, gosh, Justin, I know it's my turn, but what are you going to do when you have to be legitimately, do you have a different, because then when you're sincerely disciplining, where are you going with that? Because that's all I can think of. It's like, well, now it's like every time you're like, all right, this is serious. They're, ha, ha, funny.
No, what I like about it is that there is a difference and that they are able to understand it. Like there are moments where I go, hey, like, you know, and they get it. And I've talked about it a lot recently on the show is that I'm kind of done trying to pussyfoot around it, that if they're pissing me off, I want to let them know. And that's my other new kind of experiment that I'm going to try and see how it affects them and if it works. And there are moments that I've gotten angry and Jacob has gotten upset and said, stop yelling at me. And I tell him, I go, well, then start listening. If you listen to me and you do as you're told, then there's no problem. You know, it's not hard. I talked about this on the video game podcast where kids were always have this question, like, how do I get my parents to let me play Call of Duty or whatever, some violent video game? And I go, you know what you do? You show them you can handle it by doing everything that they are asking you to do without them even having to ask you to do it. That it's really easy to be a really good kid and you have no idea how much it will affect your parents. And I tried to help them out and do that and maybe, you know, make some other people's lives a little bit better. But and yeah. I just, all I do is just tell them, you have two fucking rules. You do exactly as you're told, and you don't cry when you don't get what you want. That's all you got to figure out, dude. Once you do that, your life is easy. So I hope that answers your question, that they
if
know.
If you can raise that kid, you're doing a hell of a job. Because those are tough. But, I mean, if that's the direction that they're heading, then kudos, man. You're doing it right.
Yeah, I think.
That's what I say.
I think it's working. I mean, he's good in school, and we'll see how Jack does. It's interesting to see the difference in their personalities. That's another kind of moment of the week, is that Jack doesn't take any bullshit from anybody. His brother or any kids that – when we'll sometimes go play at the preschool, and there's some kids that like to antagonize Jack because I think they don't have little siblings, or maybe they're the youngest, so they don't have somebody to pick on. And so they try to pick on Jack, and he'll fucking clean your clock. Like he came to dance. So
I love it. Yeah. I love it. That's awesome.
All right, your turn.
For Riley, we've been really working on. She's great about going to the bathroom. You know, she's like, gotta go, which is great. You know, we've been having a lot of success with her.
So you're in the throes of potty training?
What's that?
You're in the throes of potty training?
No. We're actually long past that.
Oh, okay.
But every time she says, "I gotta go," and then she looks at us like, so you're a part of this too. and so we go and we take down pants and then sit her down, and then, you know, she would take care of that. And then we would, you know, make sure that she wipes correctly and then put her pants back up. This was like 6 months ago. Well, now she's, you know, we're like, you got to take your pants off yourself. You got to take your panties down yourself. You got to sit yourself. You've got to wipe yourself, you know, playing that whole, okay. Cause a lot of kids are like, I can do it. But Riley's more like, you know, just do it. I'm just gonna hang back.
Like she's royalty. Like
so, we're working on. You know, we've been working on for a few months. You know, you do it. It's kind of like the whole brushing teeth. It's like we really want her to brush her own teeth because she'll half-ass it.
Yeah.
And so we're like, no. And then we get in there and we really brush her teeth. But I'm like, we gotta, you know, again, walk that line of we need you to brush your teeth well, but we really got to stop doing it.
Yeah.
She's got to do it for herself. So. Right. She's not, I know a lot of kids naturally want to do stuff on their own. She's like more like, yeah, you know, you're going to brush my teeth? Sweet. Get it done. So anyway, what she's doing now though, which is killing me in my moment of the week, is she will literally say, I got to go potty. And she will, in the middle of wherever she is, kitchen, living room, drop trowel. She doesn't just put it like to her thighs, which would be easier to walk. She takes it to the ankles.
She's in it to win it.
Takes it to the ankles, dedicated, and then waddles like a duck, and then does great. So is she doing what we want? Yes. Has this happened in preschool? Probably. And it's a stop, I gotta go potty. Boom. I mean, so bad, Justin, that she has done that and walked up the stairs. So it's like this weird Navy SEAL crawl up the stairs. It's like, wait. So now it's like, okay, you gotta wait until you get to the. It's like she's very literal. It's like, oh, wait, when I have to go potty, I take my pants down because that's what we've been working on.
Well, step one.
Can you wait till you get to the...
Step one, get to the bathroom, then you drop trowel.
But she's doing what we told her to do, so it's like that. You can't say no. You gotta be like, okay, good, now, next.
It's those wonderful moments where they teach you that you're the heir in your instructions. Like, they're very good at pointing out, here's how you fucked up and teaching me how to do this. Like,
but she's also, you know, only just turning 4, so it's super cute.
Yeah.
It's like when she's, you know, in freshman in high school. I got whoa, hey.
Whoops-a-daisy. Oh, that's great. Well,
by the way, real quick, because you won't toot your own horn, I just want to let everyone know that I just went to thedadpodcast.com and I went ahead and subscribed to the old podcast because I love you, buddy, and I think everyone else should do the same.
I appreciate that. Joseph made a nice donation to the show, and that was what I was going to talk about, that you can't. Well, here, let me do this first. If you want to come see me live doing some stand-up, I'm going to be at the River Center Comedy Club in San Antonio, Texas, April 3rd through April 7th. So that is this weekend, or by the time you're listening to this. I'm also going to be headlining in Flappers in Claremont, California on April 12th and 13th. I'm going to be headlining at Murphy's Irish Pub in Sonoma, California, April 26th and 27th. And Memorial Day weekend, I will be at Rooster Tea Feathers, and that is May 30th through June 2nd. Maybe that isn't Memorial Day weekend. It is not. It's the weekend after Memorial Day. I apologize. But anyway, you can give us a like at facebook.com/dadpodcast. Follow us on Twitter @dadpodcast. Follow me on Twitter @JustinWorsham. If you want to talk to me about your poop stories, I love talking to people on the Twitter. And as I've been pushing all year, and Joseph was just mentioning it, if everybody did the $2 a month subscription, everybody listening to the show, that literally changes my life. And really does help me out a lot, and it could even potentially make this my gig, and I could do more shows in a week if that's what you would expect. But as I said last week, I would love for you guys to be able to send me an email to show@thedadpodcast or post something on the Facebook page or send me a tweet saying, hey, I would like to support the show, but this is why I don't do the $2 a month thing, and maybe I can get an understanding as to why. Not because, honestly, maybe this is an overshare, but I have 7 people that do that. So that's a long ways from the 1,200 listen to the show. And that's why it would literally change my life and make it to where I could do this as a job and maybe cut back on the traveling and doing stand-up and all that jazz. And not to mention the fact that it looks like, and not that this is your problem and this is where I suck at selling this stuff, but it looks like Daddy might have a mortgage here coming up soon in the next couple months, which is good for me.
I thought you were going to say another kid. I was about to fall out of my chair.
I'm fixed. If we have another kid, then I'm going to also get a divorce, and this is going to be a single dad podcast. So please go to thedadpodcast.com, and you can either make a donation if you don't want to subscribe to the $2 a month thing, or there's also a link to do $2 a month, and it changes my life. And I know that there's another thing that people might be concerned about, that before, PayPal would not let me cancel your subscription. Like, you had to do it, and it was very convoluted. Now there's a way to do that. So if you're like, oh, I don't want to lock in forever, like, what if things change in my life or whatever, you can literally send me an email, and I can cancel your subscription on my own, and it will stop charging you, so you don't have to worry about that. But maybe I'm overthinking it, and I hope that it is a thing where people listen to this on the treadmill or while they're in their car, and by the time they get home in front of their computer, they forget. That's what I think it is, and that's why I keep bringing it up. So, on behalf of my good friend, is there anything that you need to plug, Mr. Barris? You want people to find you on the Book of Faces or anything like that?
I'll see you next. I'll be back in a few months, as always. Love it.
Check out a Christmas show that you're usually involved in the theater there in Denver, right? Why are you laughing? Is that insulting? I didn't mean that.
No, it's funny. I've done the last – I'll probably be doing the holiday show at the Arvada Center, which is one of the Equity Theaters in Denver. So, yes, true. I'm always on the road.
Because people could be listening to this year in the year 2087, for all we know. So
very true.
Yeah, lives forever on the interweb. So
I'm more of a – I'm a fan. I'm just a fan, Justin, just a fellow dad. I'm in it. I'm in the fighting the good fight.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much. On behalf of my good friend Joseph Bears, this is Justin Worship saying, stay frosty.
Bill and I have done a premium episode. That's right, the first premium episode of the Dad Podcast. If you want to listen to it like it was old school, or if you're an old listener who misses our dear friend Bill Glass, all you got to do is go to thedadpodcast.com, click on the store tab on the homepage, and that will take you to a spot where you can download an MP3 version of 1 hour and 20 minutes of Bill and I doing old school funny. We talk about his kids joining the soccer league. We talk about his parents. We get an update on them. And then we talk about my experiences with preschool. So please check that out at thedadpodcast.com. Then click on the store and pick it up for just $3.